Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Gate Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 237. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just continues to help me highlight and promote the great people in our profession. Also want to thank specifically our sponsors and InTech for bringing this episode to you for free. InTech is ran by a bunch of great guys, great product. If you're in the market for bumpers or bars or dumbbells, you know, you can't go wrong with the quality, can't go wrong with the customer service and just fantastic people. So please check them out. If anything, just say thanks for being a part of Iron Game Chalk Talk the next time you see them at a conference or whatnot. This week I'm joined by Sam Gardner. Sam is a strength and conditioning coach with the Team USA Paralympic. We got a chance to get to know each other a lot better in Poland recently. We spent some time in the Central Market and just a great guy. And as soon as I met him, knew I needed to have him on the show and talk a little bit about the great work that he's doing with Team USA. So Sam, I appreciate you being on the show, man.
Coach, it's a privilege. You know, I'm a big fan of everything you're doing to help benefit the field. So keep up the great work.
Thanks, man. Well, hey, your experience is vast, you know, and it's led you to your current position. And we'll dig into that as we go, but you know, you had some stops with special forces. You had stops with the NBA. You played college basketball. You know, and now you're with the Paralympics and Chula Vista. Which one of those experiences kind of best? Or where did you best defined you? Where did you grow up as a strength and conditioning coach?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's tough to just pick one. Obviously, hopefully, everywhere I've gone, I've learned from. You learn the things you like, and once in a while, you learn some things you don't like. Either way, you try to learn, right? And for me, each stop, it's the people that really made the experiences, and I've been fortunate to be really blessed by all the people that surround me. People that know a lot more about certain things than I do that I can pick their brains on and hopefully grow from. But one stop, I mean, working with the D League experience, Santa Cruz Warriors, affiliation with Golden State Warriors, it was inaugural season. They just bought the franchise and kind of set up a model that now is growing into the G League, where it's a sole affiliate. It was only about an hour and a half commute. You could bounce back and forth between the two clubs. And we literally laid the foundation, pun intended. I literally laid down the parquet floor, the new arena. And, I was blessed. I went from having all these fancy facilities at the Olympic Training Center to now I had a couple of mismatched kettlebells and some stability balls and med balls. And how do you make it happen, right? So it forced me to grow. It challenged me to get creative. It made me realize that it's not just all about any flash or any one facility. You have to be adaptable and you have to learn and grow and just find ways to make athletes better. So that experience forced me to get outside of my comfort zone. I didn't have a sport nutritionist to lean on, a sport technologist to lean on, a biomechanist to lean on. It was me and an athletic trainer, and we had to put our heads together and just make it happen. Luckily, in our first season, we made it all the way to the finals. So, we exceeded expectations, but obviously, selfishly, it would have been nice to have won that final game. But that out of all the stops recently, probably really kind of helped mold me and make me realize it's not just about where you are; it's what you do with what you got.
It's great that you bring that up, because I think so many times, especially as young strength coaches, we're so focused on trying to get to the big time, whatever that may be, and working with the best athletes and the shiny objects and the best weight rooms and the whole deal. But I mean, where you learn the most and where you become a great strength coach, in my opinion, is when you're taking those things are taken away from you, and you have to be creative, and you have to still get the job done with limited resources. And makes it all that much more effective and efficient when you do have lots of tools available to you.
Right, right. Yeah, when those things get reintroduced to a program, then you can use them again, but I won't lean as heavily on them as I have in the past, because I know there's other ways to get things done.
Great. You know, you don't have that long of a career, without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made in coaching and how you learn from it?
Yeah, I I look back, I mean, I kind of had my head down when it was down to the grindstone for the first 7.5, 8 years of my career. And I wish I took more time to enjoy the journey, enjoy the process. You know, I've since taken time to reflect the past year and a half, 2 years, and make taking time for my family a priority, time for rest and time for digest. I wasn't taking that time earlier in my career. And, you know, I look back at some of the things I've been able to do, and again, the great experiences from the great people I've met along the way. And it's amazing. This field can offer you so much. And if you just have your nose down the entire time, sometimes you can kind of miss it and not enjoy it as much. And for me, making sure I have time for my family now too, you know, growing as a man and not just a coach, making sure I take time and spend time with my family is something I have to really take as a priority. Earlier in my career, it was just, you know, go, go, go. And I was so enthusiastic and so passionate about learning that I wasn't really taking time for myself as a person. And I think the past year and a half, just kind of reevaluating that and making that a priority is something that's really helped me as an individual.
Yeah, I mean, I often say on the show, and people that listen for a while know that, you know, unless you have the home team right, whatever team you're working with, this doesn't go, you know. I was the same way. I mean, you know, I took first 7 years of my career, I didn't take a single day vacation, and you know, and I'll say that it's I'm a recovering workaholic, I guess the way I'd put it. But I think you know, enjoying the process, you know, taking a moment, and you know, when I'm running out in the tee at Tennessee or here in Rocky Top for the first time, or you know, being in an NFL opening day or whatever, those are things that, you know, you don't get back, you know, it's, you know, I think we all need to take those opportunities and soak them in. Well, obviously, I mean, you could have done a little bit of everything. I mean, you know, basketball is a passion of yours. I mean, obviously, you know, Special Forces is an incredible population, but you chose, you know, to be working with Paralympic athletes. And, you know, you made a statement over in Poland that really resonated with me. And you opened your presentation by saying, if you can just motivate one person to work with these great athletes, and went on to show examples of, I think you gave an example of a 100-meter sprinter, you know, running the 9 something, you know, and it's like that, that's a, I mean, you and I can't run that, you know, that's a world class, you know.
That's right.
Why Paralympics? Why Paralympians?
Yeah, great question, Coach. You know, and it's a passion that's definitely grown over the past. I'm going into my fourth season now supporting U.S. Paralympics. You know, I kind of have a unique role where I still do work with resident Olympic programs, but I kind of take the lead out here in Chula Vista, where I am the lead on Paralympic strength and conditioning. So kind of a split role, two different hats that I like to jump back and forth. I can learn from one group and apply it to the other, and learn from the other group and apply it back to the Olympic side. So it's a blessing for me. You know, and for me, it's trying to spread the word. Like you said, if I can motivate, there are a lot of coaches out there who are looking for work and, you know, who want to get involved in strength and conditioning and don't even realize there's an avenue within Paralympic sport. You know, the Olympics seem to be a little bit more in the spotlight here in the U.S. and other nations have good support systems in place for the Paralympians. In the USOC, we're starting to grow that support system. When I first jumped on, there was really just a high performance director and a sport nutritionist than myself. And since then, we've almost tripled in staff size and providing more resources for our best athletes in the nation. You know, they're amazing athletes in their own way and in their own right. And people just aren't really as educated in the U.S. about Paralympics. You know, we don't stream it. We don't view it. It's a top 8 viewed sporting event in the world. And in the U.S., we don't even stream it. So if we ever did, I think that number would skyrocket to top 5.
Right.
If it was live covered. And if we just have more recognition. I know the flywheel is spinning in the right direction. Heading into Rio, there were actually a lot of sponsorship and ads that featured Paralympic athletes. And it kind of started to open people's minds to what is this, you know. And it's the Paralympics themselves, they were created right after World War I. Over in the UK, they were trying to get wounded warriors back in society and finding a way for them to use sport as a realm for that kind of mode. And since then, it's just grown into one of the biggest sporting events in the world. You know, 2.8 million tickets sold in 2012, and 2.4 million tickets sold in Rio. It's one of the bigger sporting events in the world. And in the U.S., a lot of coaches just don't know about it. And a lot of athletes don't know about it either. People who have disabilities who could be great Paralympic athletes that, you know, don't realize that this is even an avenue. So For me, this past year, it's just about getting the word out a little more. The first 3 years, just figuring out what I was doing as a coach. And
right.
This past year, it's just trying to grow a legacy here and make sure that other coaches know that this is an avenue for them, and people with disabilities, that they can recognize that this could be something for them as well. It might help them kind of regain confidence, self-esteem, and feel a little bit more of a member of society.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to dig into there. I want to get to, you know, the challenges of working with that population. But before you do, I think something that, again, might resonate with a lot of the coaches that are listening. Before we got on the phone, you know, on the Skype call here, I was talking to some young coaches that were looking for opportunities and having trouble finding opportunities. But there is, I mean, just from a selfish standpoint, there is opportunity within Paralympic, you know, working with Paralympic athletes. So there's just, you know, like you said, you were one of the first, and now there's just a handful. But yet this is a sport around the world that is watched, you know, and tickets are bought and the whole deal. And so what advice would you have to a young coach that's interested in getting into working with Paralympic athletes, where they're at, or, you know, do they have to go to the USOC to do that, or is there other methods and ways?
Yeah, that's tough. So we're slowly growing a network. Like I said, you know, 4 years ago, there wasn't really a whole lot of options unless you were with the USOC. First and foremost, we're growing our medical network, which would involve psychology as well as healthcare providers. And what I'm hoping to do is push forward and to start to hopefully create a network where there are SNCs that are credentialed and experienced SNCs across the country who want to get involved, and maybe we can actually start growing a strength and conditioning network. Because, you know, part of the issue being such a large nation, yeah, we have a huge athletic population, which is a blessing, but it can be a curse where we're decentralized. You know, we only have 3 training centers throughout the country. We have a bunch of training sites growing, and having coaches that are interested, eager, and ready to help in different locations could potentially help different clubs that are located throughout the country, or even just young aspiring athletes who are in grassroots programs who want to get better, but have to rely on camps where they only come to maybe the training center once a year. So for me, it's just about growing, first and foremost, the knowledge of what Paralympics is, but also trying to get young coaches involved and see if they could kind of chip in and help out.
So do you recommend them reaching out to you, or you know, should they get involved with Special Olympics, or, you know, what would be the best course of action?
Yeah, I mean, Special Olympics is it's a kind of a separate entity, but that obviously would be a great experience for any individual as well. As far as working with Paralympics, physically disabled athletes, you know, if they want to reach out to me, I'm happy to try to help. We haven't quite grown to the point where we have an established network or an established point of process, but that's something that's on my radar and something I'm pushing forward through my through the chain of command right now. So hopefully in the next year or two, we can get things rolling away where, just like we have our medical network established, maybe we can actually start having a network of qualified SNCs throughout the country.
Right. No, that's fantastic. Well, obviously, you know, going from working with elite NBA athletes or elite, you know, special forces operators to working with people that, you know, can't see or missing a limb or, you know, any other number of, you know, disabilities is challenging. You know, what's some of the biggest challenges that you've faced and kind of how you've overcome those as a coach?
Yeah, it's been a learning process. Unfortunately, the first year it was a lot of, you know, trial by fire and just finding ways to get better. For me, I think communicating with the athletes helps. A lot of times they're going to come up with ways to create adaptations or, you know, adapt an exercise or adapt a training philosophy or idea to fit them quicker than you might. They're living it. They have the disability. And they come up with creative solutions quicker than I can half the time. So some of the best adaptations we come up with have actually been athlete-driven. Outside of that, it's just trying to think outside the box. You know, whatever box I thought I had, you have to take 2 steps outside of that and look at it from a global scope. You know, just because we can do something doesn't always mean we should. And, you know, the other quote that kind of goes hand-in-hand with that would be, spend more time focusing on what you can do, or less time focusing on what you can't do. So kind of keeping those 2 ideas in mind while working with Paralympic sports has helped me. You know, we can find ways to create these awesome, fancy adaptations for an exercise, but without looking at the global picture, is that best for the athlete in that particular time, in that particular program? And, you know, there's a huge health component that's involved with this as well. If they haven't accepted disability and we're just trying to jump on performance, they haven't actually kind of come to grasp with what the cards that have been dealt to them, we're just going to be spinning our wheels and maybe even going backwards. So first and foremost, it's getting the athlete's health in check first. And then from there, we can start worrying more and more about performance.
You did an exercise over in Poland that I really liked that I took notes on and plan on having my athletes do as just an experience in the opportunities that they've been given. But you placed two coaches and one was blindfolded and you had another trying to demonstrate. And then you had the added challenge of having to work through an interpreter to do that. You know, I felt like it was really powerful, and I don't know if I heard this in one of your presentations, but I've heard it recently that, you know, some people would kill for your worst day, you know, and so waking up and having missing a limb or waking up and being blind or something along those lines. I mean, and I think our athletes sometimes take for granted the opportunities that they've been given. And so, you know, taking your athletes and blindfolding them and having them lead them through an agility course or, you know, a strength training exercise is not just a good coaching exercise to get them to use their communication tools, but also it's a good exercise and just that the opportunities that we've all been given in life. And so I thought that was really powerful and appreciated that.
I appreciate it. It would have been maybe a little smoother if my videos were working that day. But, you know, you just got to adapt.
It is part of it. But I think, for, you know, going to that point, have you come up with any kind of a, you know, I mean, obviously every athlete's a little bit different, but have you come up with kind of a checklist as to, you know, are you going sensory and then auditory and then, you know, have you gone through any kind of a checklist of coaching cues that are becoming very effective in your case, but also would turn around and apply to just any athlete?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Coach. And there's been some great work coming out over the past couple of years that has kind of made me feel like, oh, wow, maybe I was onto something, right? You know, people like Brett Blackfield and Nick Winkelman have been doing some good research and pulling out some old ideas. And going back to my undergrad, too, just studying physical education before I switched focuses and had a double major in movement science and learning pedagogy, you know, motor learning, motor control, how do we teach, how do we communicate? Having my professor standing over my shoulder and constantly critiquing me at the time wasn't super fun, but looking back at it, there were a lot of valuable lessons. You know, what feedback are you giving? Who are you giving the feedback to? Do they know that you're giving them the feedback? How is your progression set up? Is it set up for success? All those things were constantly being critiqued, even in my undergrad. So now I can look back and enjoy those experiences. At the time, it probably wasn't always the funnest thing, but I don't think I have any one specific one size fits all for any of these athletes. And even if I did with able-bodied athletes, I don't know that with this population I could. You know, you talk about principles-based versus philosophy-based, and it's very true with these Paralympic athletes. If I just had one cookie-cutter idea, whether it be a cue or a program, and I try to give it to somebody, you know, let's say it's my track group, let's say it's my track sprinters, well, you know, somebody might be in a wheelchair sprinting 100 meters. Somebody might be blind sprinting 100 meters. Somebody might be an amputee above the knee. Somebody might be a double below the knee amputee, all in the same training group. They might all run the same event. But I can't use one cue or one system for all those athletes. It just doesn't really work too well because they all have such individual needs and come from such different backgrounds. So for me, it's been great. It's been a great learning experience because I have to constantly adapt, constantly think outside of my again, my parental box that I thought I had established, you know, my first 7 or 8 years of my career. And now it's stepping two steps outside of that box and reevaluating the whole process and zooming out a bit.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I think what I've always tried to do, and this was reinforced into me by Mark Sanovich with the TMA Bucks when I worked for him, but throughout my career, I've always tried to use, you know, all three forms of communication, whether it be visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. And so I wouldn't just tell somebody, you know, how to do an exercise. I would tell them, I would show them, and then I would have them feel what it's supposed to feel like when introducing something. And I think, you know, obviously that one of those senses might be taken out in your case, or one of those might be taken out, but I think, again, to apply it to our current setting, so many times as coaches, we just say, hey, go do this, go jump rope, you know, and take for granted that they know how to do that, you know?
I'm sorry, but working with a visually impaired athlete, obviously you can't demonstrate Right. And if they've never seen an exercise in their life, if you just tell them to do an exercise or you say hit a position or hit triple extension, they don't know what that means, right?
Right.
So you have to use your hands sometimes and help them learn it. Once they learn it, getting their feedback on how it felt, where they felt it, then you can actually kind of start to work on intent and really kind of push that actual exercise towards what your training goal is. But it might just, you gotta be patient and you gotta be creative.
I like that. Well, I think there's I think there's a lot of people that are listening that maybe working with Paralympic athletes isn't for them, but they might be interested in the Olympic movement, be it in this country or another. What would be some advice that you would have for coaches that are wanting to work with the Olympic Training Center? How would they go about that process?
Yeah, so, here in Chula, we went through a transition. We became a training site this past year, but in Colorado Springs and in Lake Placid, I know they have S&C, Strength and Conditioning Internships. A lot of the coaches who are full-time within the USOC, almost all of them, had gone through the internship program at one point or another. I'm a product of it, and I was fortunate to be the first intern who ever actually had to transition from one location to the other. So I actually did almost 8 months worth of internships between Colorado Springs and Chula Vista back in the day. Again, I was fortunate and blessed. The USOC couldn't get rid of me. They created the first ever fellowship position and brought me back to Colorado Springs for 1 year, and it lasted about a little over two years. So that internship really kind of spiraled my career as far as working with the Olympic movement here with Team USA. It's competitive, but for anybody who's interested, I would say go after it. You might not get it the first semester, but stay with it. I had interns come work with us who applied 4 times. For whatever reason, it was the right fit. The 4th time for that individual, and that individual for us, but it might not have been the first 3 times. So just stay persistent if that's something you really want to pursue.
That's great, man. Well, we end the show with some resources here. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
Yeah, I think earlier in my career, like I said, having my nose down to the grindstone, it was being reminded to have fun. And it was from a coach who had his CSCS when I was like 3 years old. Here I am, taking myself way too seriously 7 or 5 years into my career. And a guy who's been doing it as long as I've been alive and doing it at the highest levels at multiple places just reminded me that it's okay to have fun. Why do people join athletics in the first place? Generally, it's to have fun. They want to go play, or they want to be with their buddies, or they want to get involved in sport to have fun initially. And, sometimes we drive the fun out of it, but even at the highest levels, you have to take it seriously. And I take being a coach very seriously. It's an honor and a privilege. But once in a while, it's okay to lighten up and have a good time with the athletes when it's not that training directly.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. I love that. Somebody that's been at CSCS when you were 3. I'm going to use that one.
Yeah, right. Here I am, a hotshot coach 5 years into my career. And yeah.
Right. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Yeah, great question, Coach. I'm a bit of a bookworm, so it's hard for me to narrow it down to just one. But if I can kind of break it up to a training books, Strength and Power in Sport for me by Comey as the main editor. That was huge. I really tend to enjoy focusing more on the art of coaching, and sometimes breaking things down to the cellular level or looking at tendon stiffness and things like that. I have to really take my time to process that information. And that book just had a little bit of everything for me at that point in my career that really helped me expand my knowledge from a physiological standpoint, biochemical standpoint. Also, on the same line, Science and Practices of Strength Training by Ted Zorsky. The second edition is great too, but going back to the first edition, the first time I read it, that was an eye-opener for me. And a lot of the same principles that we use in strength training now, it's all kind of derived from that book to me. It's been a great resource for me. As far as just life and just personal growth, Garden City by John Mark Comer. It's Garden City is the title. It's called Work, Rest, and the Art of Being Human. It's written by a pastor out of the Portland area. And like I said, the past year and a half, almost 2 years now, I'm trying to rededicate myself to focusing on myself as a man, not just as a coach. I'm a human who is super passionate about performance and passionate about coaching, but it's okay to actually take care of myself too. And that book kind of really helped shine some perspective on that. And then lastly, I guess, Ego is the Enemy is a book I read this past year by Ryan Holiday.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'd like to think I'm not an egotistical person, but I think it's human nature. Every once in a while, we start thinking of ourselves more highly than maybe we should, or thinking of ourselves more often than we should, I guess. And that book kind of helped shine some light on that and really kind of make me reevaluate some of the mindset that I had.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Any apps or websites that you use regularly?
It's funny, the app I use daily, and I've been using it for almost 4 years now, it's not flashy or sexy, but Sleep Pillow. I need white noise, and sleep is so important in my life. You know, if I don't have good sleep, I'm not going to be in a good mood. If I'm not in a good mood, I'm not going to have a good time. The app is probably not going to benefit from it. So for me to get good rest, I need some white noise in my life, and Sleep Pillow is an app I use all the time. As far as training goes and working with athletes, starting to dive down, athlete monitoring. It's an AMS system that I'm kind of partnering up with this past year and trying to find ways to, you know, really push communication with athletes who are on rotation or a remote basis. It's kind of a challenge. I really feel like I'm better at coaching athletes who I see daily than I am the ones that I don't.
And, right.
It's something I'm trying to get better at. And for me, it all comes down to communication. And if an app can help drive that process, I'm all for it.
Right, right. Well, that's fantastic. Well, man, like I mean, we got a chance to get to know each other better over there. And like I told you over there, I'm really impressed by you and I'm impressed by the work you're doing. And I mean, it takes, obviously a person that is patient and creative to work with the population. And, but more importantly, keeping the bigger picture in front. And, I mean, we're lucky to have a guy like you working with our US team and just appreciate, you know, the way that you're going about your business, but also the way that you're living your life. And so thanks for coming on the show, man.
Well, Coach, thanks for the kind words. I don't know that I'm always deserving, and you know, I throw this out a lot, but again, I've been surrounded by great people, and anything I said that you enjoyed, it probably was stolen from one of them at some point. And
sure,
anything I said that anybody didn't enjoy, it's probably my own idea. So let's not get
right now. Awesome, man. Appreciate you.
All right, Coach, have a great day.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.